This episode of Super Pulp Science is brought to you by Friesen's Book Printing, making great books with great creators for over 100 years.
Attention, citizens, it's time for Super Pulp Science.
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I am here with my long-suffering co-host, Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork. And we have brought to the studio, virtually, today, somebody that we literally could not make most of our books without. Donovan Bergman, why don't you tell our listeners who you are and what gives you the right to be on this podcast?
Well, I've been listening to the podcast for a long time, so I don't know if that qualifies me at all. Donovan Bergman, I am a sales representative for Friesen's Corporation, an employee-owned printer based in Altona, Manitoba, in southern Manitoba, just north of the U.S. border. And I've been the main production and sales contact for Chasing Artwork and Gregory and most of the, I think pretty much all the projects that that you guys have done through Friesen's. I've been one of the main contacts. So I guess that's what gives me the right to be here.
And we're glad to have you. Why don't you, for the dear listener's sake, talk a little bit about Friesen's bona fides, so they'll know what scale of printer that we're dealing with.
Yeah, so Friesen's is, I don't know exactly where we would stack up right now, but we would be, in terms of volume, one of the top 3 to 5 maybe printers in Canada for book printing specifically, and would be in like the top 25 in North America, all based out of nice little community of 4,200 people or so in southern Manitoba. But we print for clients all around North America, some overseas as well. And more recently, we've been doing more and more work with some of the larger publishers, the what they call the Big Five, or maybe becoming the Big Four in North American publishing. And we've got some pretty established relationships there. And then along with that, in my territory, which is primarily the prairies, I have lots of what I'd call small to medium size publishers. They could be independents, like the two of you in terms of the work that you do, and others are folks that have, you know, very traditional publishing programs that run, you know, 4 to 8 new titles in the spring and the same in the fall, and then reprints on top of that. So we print for, you know, I do small runs, 350 copies of certain projects, and then we'll do copies, you know, or runs that are in the, you know, 100,000 copy range. So kind of lots in the middle, but those are kind of the two extremes that we'd work within.
So anyone that's ever held a book, I think you're one of the invisible hands that held it first. And people often don't realize, they think, oh, author made this, publisher made this, but they don't remember that actually a printing factory made this. And in order to make that possible, there's a lot of hands along the way. One of the things that Justin and I wanted to sort of do with you, Donovan, today is play a game called We've Never Made a Book, for the sake of the dear listener, and ask you a bunch of questions, like starting out questions, so that people can hear what those answers might be like and, you know, get your expertise in a little bit of a fun way. Are you game for that?
I love it. I thought that might be part of the direction we're going. So that sounds fantastic.
So you're ready. Okay.
It's like, it's surprising. We like, pre-event, we would do, especially like a lot of Comic-Cons and hang out with really established big artists in the video game industry, that like make their living doing art, but have never made a book. And they are always excited about the idea of making a book, but it seems daunting even to people who work full time making artwork and printing artwork. Making a book is a hurdle that a lot of them haven't tackled yet. So I wanted to take the opportunity of this podcast to just kind of go through baby steps of like how you with your first book could make it a reality. So I think we were, you know, we've been there. We were there. It is scary at first. And now I'm on book. I think I'm on my 12th book coming up this year. Gregory, you 20 something. Who knows? Yeah. And so it's, we're getting a little better at it, but we still have questions along the way.
We
so.
Learn something new every single mm-hmm. time. And every time we ask a question in a different way, sometimes you will present us a different kind of solution just because we haven't asked the right question, you know? And like you say, the range of 350 books to 200,000 book printing, there are lots of different kinds of answers. So let's play a game where I am a science fiction author and I want to self-publish a book, and I have brought my artist along to the meeting because there's some illustrations that are going to be inserted and he's going to do the cover. What can you do for us? Hi, Donovan. I wrote a book and I want to print a bunch of it. How many do I need and how much will it cost?
Great questions. So the first thing typically that I would actually say is I actually don't go to the costing structure first. Generally, what I like to do is I like to get a sense of where the author is at in the process. So have you talked with an editor? So in your case, you know, is your book primarily black and white and it's just some black and white sketches that are inside, or is it full color? And
I should do?
You need to do a little bit of research and see what people in your genre are doing. And then we can look at both options for you, both color and black and white. Some color maybe, with the rest of it being black and white. There's a number of printing options we'd have. But what I want to get a sense of early on is to what level and to what degree, I would say, of professionalism does the author, and in this case, the author and artist, do they want to do? So are you willing to put money into editing, or are you going to say that your cousin who's an English teacher in high school is going to do your editing? Nothing wrong with that.
I have spell checks.
But hiring an editor and paying an editor. Yep. So you're good. We can move on then.
I also want to point out that I am a unique and special snowflake in this particular example. And so we want to do things differently than everyone else, but also the same so that we can become famous and well-known authors.
Yeah, this book is going to sell like crazy. We know that for sure.
How many lots of reprints. I can see it now.
Well, yeah. We think if we print 10,000, that's a good amount for us to start with our first book, and all the bookstores are just going to love it. Does that sound like a plan?
That certainly is a plan. I think what we might want to do is to start by pumping the brakes a little bit. And what we want to do again early on is I look at the level of investment in terms of the front end. So when I say front end, I'm going to mean editorial, design and layout. Are these things that you're putting money into? And in some cases, you know, for people like the two of you, the design and layout, that takes care of itself because it's within the wheelhouse of what you're doing. The vast majority of people that I talk to for their first book, that is not in their wheelhouse. Anybody can create a PDF from Microsoft Word that you can print from, but in almost every case, it's going to look like a PDF that was created in Microsoft Word and is not going to look like a desktop published book.
Donovan's dead, isn't he? Beyond all help?
So?
Science can use Donovan's brain. Hurry or we'll never make it.
You're crazy. Count me out.
If Greg and I were a team where he can write, I can draw, but we can't do the graphic design part, we can't lay it out to make it look like a professional book, are you, is Friesen's, is the like the book printer a good place to be going to find that missing piece? Do you guys have a list of designers that we can look at and talk to and get to help us finish our book?
Absolutely. So in some cases, some printers will have people in-house that do design. At Friesen's, we do not offer that as a standard service for external clients. We do our own internal design, but we don't have somebody on staff that's focused on external book design. So what we have is we have a list, or I have a an extensive list of folks in Winnipeg, if somebody's in Calgary or Saskatoon, anywhere within my my territory, I have a list of folks that we can connect you with that can do that design locally if you want. In a lot of cases now, people are less concerned about local because so much more is done by Zoom. PDFs are much easier to email, or even really large files are much easier to transfer now than they were 10 or 12 years ago. And you don't have to send flash drives or zip drives or anything like that anywhere.
And 10 or 12 months ago, it's easier.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. So that's something that we would provide a connection. And those are all, I don't know if I'd say that those designers are quote unquote vetted by us, but they're all designers that we've worked with and are designers that are not problem designers. So these are designers that are going to come up with clean files that are going to work through our workflow, fly through there, no problem. They're people who are in the book industry for the most part. And so they know the ins and outs of what not to do on a design that could cause a problem when we get to press, because there are a million things you can do that look great on a computer screen, but may not produce the way you want when it comes to the finished book once it's bound and trimmed and all those things. So I look at the front end in terms of editorial and design. And then in terms of your quantity, what I'd want to discuss with you is, what is your marketing plan? Are you doing a Kickstarter to launch the book? And, you know, are you going to have, you know, 1,000 people who buy books right off the bat, and that maybe pays for most of your print run? Are you going to be doing any touring? These are some things pre-pandemic, these would be standard questions. Touring, are you doing book events? Are you going to conferences, Comic-Cons, like the types of things that you guys would attend? Because one of the biggest things, I think most creators that I've worked with, at least, they're generally really good on the creation side, but haven't thought near as much about the follow-up of when 2,500 or 10,000 books arrive on their door. That is a really intimidating moment, and a moment where they kind of get brought back to reality. And it's like, oh boy, I've got skids of these books, skids of cartons of my book that I now need to sell. And if you haven't properly planned out where you're going to do that, how you're going to do that, that can be troublesome. Books on a bookshelf typically don't sell by themselves. You guys are masters of marketing when you're at your events. And yes, you are. And I think that's one of the big things people don't think about really early on in terms of, you know, their volume. Sometimes they want to hit a volume to get a certain price point, but that doesn't always make the difference in the end, or make it worth it in the end, because you end up with books that just sit in a basement and don't go anywhere.
I think that's the most common first time book printers mistake that we hear, and that we've heard from friends and colleagues is it's their first book. They're really excited about it. They really want it to be a big success. So they're gonna need big quantities, and they overextend themselves on that first print run. And then they don't realize, like you said, the amount of work. It's a full-time job. It's on you. You have to go to the bookstores. You have to go to those events. If you have all the free time in the world, absolutely. But if you still have a real person job, you can't book tour. You can't hit the pavement and go to all these bookstores and get consignment contracts written up. Like it's a lot of work.
So by all means, fulfill your dream of making your first book and self-publishing it, but maybe only print 500 or 1,000 copies that you can move within a calendar year or two calendar years, because otherwise you're buried under the next one. If you're only going to make one book ever, then sure, I guess print as many as you want, but that's not really how people operate in a creative space. They keep making new things and new things and new things.
Exactly. And I'll just tag on there. One of the things that has shifted dramatically as well in the last 5 to 10 years is the ability to run a reprint after the fact, at lower quantities in some cases, and not have it cost an arm and a leg. So I think what I often tell people, or when I'm trying to coach them through this part, is like I find myself being a bit of a teacher in this. And so when I'm talking to somebody new, I'm trying to educate them on all these different steps. And I often recommend, think about running, like you said, what you might sell in the first year, year and a half, something like that. And if you need to, you're far better off in terms of overall finances to come back and reprint, as opposed to printing five times as many books as you need and then sitting on them forever. And like you said, those are finances that are now tied up that can't fund that next project that you want to do.
Which, like, I was kind of, because Friesen's is a business, and the best, if you're wearing your business hat and being a cold-hearted business person, somebody coming along and wanting 10,000 books is a good paycheck for you guys, versus like you're kind of your coach. It's very admirable that you actually coach them down to a reasonable amount that they can handle, rather than just saying, oh yeah, do 10,000. That's a great idea. And move on to the next sucker with a book. So I've talked to some bigger self-publishing companies and publishers in the States where that seemed to be the general, like it was just salesmen trying to get as much as they can out of you with your book. So I really appreciate that Friesen's actually, you know, takes the time to coach.
Talks people off the ledge.
He talks people off the ledge, yeah, and tries to temper those mistakes. I think that's great.
Now, is that a function, Donovan, of the fact that Friesen's as a corporation and as a, you know, a self-owned corporation has big enough clients that you don't have to trick people out of their printing budgets?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things I think that come into play. One is that as large as you might think the publishing world is, it's a small world. And so fair service, good service goes a long way in, and maybe it doesn't work with every customer you talk to, but when you're helping the customer make the best decision for them, that word travels fast, you know. And think about the network of people that you are in terms of Comic-Cons, selling books, doing that. Like, these are people you see over and over and over again. And when I've traveled to different conferences, you see the same people again and again. And the last thing I want is to show up there and have somebody, you know, talk to me about not being served well in terms of how the education or the, you know, the suggestions that we made along the way. And it also stems from our, you know, Friesen's is a company that's over 100 years old, and our founder's kind of guiding principle is that Friesen's will be successful if our customers are successful. And our customers aren't successful when they overprint by 10 times the number of units that they need. They're successful when they print what they need and get the service that they need to make those books happen. So I think that's a guiding principle that, you know, maybe it certainly is stated inside the company, but I think a lot of the reps that I know, they've also kind of, that's an inherent part of how they do business.
And it's also true that if you've printed properly, there might be profits, and you're more likely to go back to your same printer with those profits to print again than if you've been burned forever.
Absolutely.
A lifetime customer, you know, pays its dividends.
Even a small print run, once you've sold that, you've made a profit. You're making more than it costs to print that small amount. So now you can take those proceeds and do a bigger print run, because now you've proven that you can move those 350, 500 books. And that's what I always recommend. Like, it doesn't sound like a lot when you're looking at numbers like 3 to 10,000, but 350 books, if it's your first book, that's a lot of books to sell.
Because those first books are often to your friends, your family, your immediate network. And so you don't want to overburden them with this, like, suggest, like, you constantly have to visit, like, did you buy this? You know, I have 10,000 of these in my garage, like, God, help me out here, maybe take 10, right? You don't want to put people in that position.
Do you control it, or does that control you?
I wouldn't call it control. I'd say I make my mind receptive, submit to the brain's will, the brain takes over, that's all.
Let's imagine now that you've talked us down from the ledge. We have a reasonable printing plan. We've got a substantive editor. We've got sort of a pro pre-flight, we think, of the book. So we're sending you those files. What are the most common errors that come across your desk that we can maybe help the listener avoid?
I think one of a big one is thinking that because they've done a pre-flight that the files are going to work fine. And I, on our end, I would say, and I think the biggest thing that I try and do every time I work with a new customer, and even every time I work with a customer that we maybe haven't printed with in even 6 or 8 months or 12 months, where this isn't what they do every day, I always get sample files in advance and let our tech support review them, because I'm not the guy that's going to be able to, you know, run a pre-flight on them and give you the full report. But we have a tech support department that'll do that, and they'll identify, you know, if there's images that are low resolution. That's one that happens quite regularly. People swear that they embedded the, you know, the high resolution file, and you know, it all of a sudden is like, oh, we did this for screen resolution, you know, for web resolution, not for print resolution. And, you know, the images are 72 DPI instead of 300 DPI. So that's one that we see quite frequently on books with a lot of artwork. It can be bleed issues where the images don't extend past the edge of the page like they're supposed to. And I think the big thing is having our tech support review the files gives us an assurance that when those final files come in, they're going to be able to run through the system quick. They're going to be able, then we can meet the target date that we've provided you in terms of finished books, and everybody ends up being much happier than if we just run files without doing that test.
Does that cost extra? Like, feel like if a person is sending you files, I mean, I know some of these answers, but it's good if they get the full answer from you. If someone has a few images and they're not sure and they want to send them to you and you're going to send them to tech support, are they expecting an invoice from that? How does that work?
So test files as a standard, one round of testing is no charge. And we often will do, if there's color images or something like that you want to see the resolution of, we'll output some high res proofs at no charge as well. Typically, you know, 6 pages and maybe the cover for a testing purpose. Make sure the color's on track and make sure the files are on track. Occasionally, if that first set of files has a lot of issues flagged, we'll probably do a second set of testing, not a second set of proofs necessarily, but a second test, so that, again, we want to have the fewest flags when we actually run the full proof, because at that point, there are fees to make changes. Once we've run the files and we've output proofs, then there are fees, but any of those corrections that we can do before you submit the final print files, that's there's no charge at that point. So we try and get all of that cleared up before that final file date.
I wanted to ask as well. So I work in InDesign, which has a bunch of pre-flight tools. You can bring up Windows and see the DPI of everything. You can go through your images and see what's CMYK and what's RGB and fix things there. But once it's pumped out to a PDF, is there another software or service that I can go through before I send it to Friesens to check my pre-flight issues?
Short answer would be yes. Longer answer would be, I don't know exactly which program we use. We use a program called PitStop that is integrated into our prepress system. And so, you know, our prepress system is something that I don't know exactly what it costs, but it will have been hundreds of thousands of dollars to integrate this system that works with files coming in, outputting plates for press. And PitStop, I believe, is the one that they use, is the pre-flight tool that they use that our tech support uses to do the pre-test. And then we'll also be the same program where when we run our automation, that the files get run through as well.
Yeah, I asked because my last graphic novel that I did with Friesens, Dragon Nanny, it was 104 pages and I had zero issues. And I was so proud that I had zero pre-flight issues. I think like there's a couple DPIs that were like a little bit lower, but nothing that would ever, that you guys were just on the side of caution, like this is approaching the line, but it wasn't under. And then the next file I sent, I had a bunch of embedded images that InDesign couldn't, like, didn't have access to the raw data of those images anymore. And so on my end, the file looked perfect. But then when Friesens got it, they found all these issues that I wasn't able to see. And so it kind of came as a bit of a shock. Like, I shouldn't have been embedding those files, I guess, but I couldn't see those issues on my end at all. And I was wondering how I could avoid that. So it sounds like this might be a good thing to get if you're making books for a living. Having an extra pre-flight checker like this would be invaluable.
Absolutely. I think a lot of trade in kind of conventional publishers that are in the business of doing books all the time, they have some software of some kind that would do that last check from their finished PDFs that they're planning to send us, just to give them that, you know, sense of, you know, ease and calm knowing, yep, we've got everything nailed down here.
There can also be a moment when you get your book proofs back where there's a ton of flags. It seems like there's like hundreds of things that are potentially wrong at first. And that can be a moment of like enormous anxiety, like you're racing to a deadline, you're trying to get it right, and you have a due date and you have some of these flags. And I want to assure the listeners that many of these will be things that, at least in Friesen's case, they're erring on the side of caution. You may have already considered it, like this image is a little close to the edge, but they don't know how you envision the final book should look and what you're comfortable with letting go. So they flag everything according to some pretty stringent guidelines of like so far from the margin, so far from the gutter. And like in my case, I don't mind in some images if stuff dives into the gutter on the page turn. But from a straight up pre-flight design person, they're gonna look at that and be like, that is an error, and circle it and flag it. And so not to panic when you get a book that comes back that seems like there's a ton of stuff wrong, just calmly go through each thing and know that they're being very careful. It's also fair to say that you can call your book rep up and say, hey, I don't understand what's wrong with this particular thing. Is that also true?
Absolutely. I typically recommend, again, if first time through, at the very least, when you get your proofs and you look things through, you know, very briefly, you take a quick look at them, call either your customer service representative or your sales representative. If you have any questions specific to, you know, if we've flagged, you know, a whole bunch of things in terms of images or bleeds or different things like that, have a conversation with us before you panic, before you start adjusting files. Do not do any of that until you've had a conversation, because like you said, some things are things that we flag, but the artist or the author is okay letting them go, knowing that they don't fit exactly what our settings would be, but they'll still print okay and it'll still work. It's just not going to be ideally how we would tell somebody to set it up. So every sales rep has an implant. So I'm a sales representative. Every one of us has an implant customer service rep who's kind of the direct line to our tech support and to our pre-press department. And so the implant tech support or implant customer service rep is there to help anytime there are any questions like that, walking through that process of approving. Some people aren't sure how to approve the proofs. And so, yeah, we've got people to walk you through that whole time. And if there's something specific that neither myself nor my CSR can answer, because it's a very technical question, then we get our tech support involved again, and they'll be able to provide direct feedback on that.
Okay, so let's go back. Gregor and I have a book that's almost done. Like, at what point do we sit down with you and figure out print dates? Our book will be finished in February, we think. When should we be talking to you to start discussing that due date at Friesen's?
So there's two ways I'll answer that. In a regular time frame, in a regular year, I would say you typically want, the printer wants as much advance notice as you can get. So let's say you're thinking February, we would want to typically be talking, you know, 3 to 4 months in advance of that, just to make sure that the production time is set aside appropriately, that it's a decent turnaround. We typically try and work with, you know, 5 to 6 weeks from files to finished books delivering. So that's answer number one. Answer number two is, in the current climate we find ourselves in, where print and binding availability, stock, paper stock availability is at a premium, as soon as you have an inkling that this is something that you want to do, let's have that discussion. Let's get things started. Even if it's with specs that you don't think are going to be final, but they're close to final, we can always adjust the quote and adjust the order as we go. But we're in a situation where our forward loading is at an unprecedented level. I've been with the company for over 15 years, and we've just never experienced something like this. And there's a whole host of factors we could probably do a whole different podcast on that's affecting this. But the sooner you can have that conversation with the sales rep, the sooner we can create a good schedule for you, which is the better off we are in terms of trying to hit, if you have any critical dates, you know, if you've got an event that you want books at, let's not set it so that it's 5 weeks to the date that event starts. Let's give ourselves a little bit of play, because there's almost always something, whether it could be on our end in terms of, you know, it could right now it's paper stock availability. Maybe it's, you know, heaven forbid, you know, press goes down. There's things that happen that we can't account for all the time, or the files are later than we thought. You know, all of a sudden your cover artist isn't ready, and so we need to wait a few more days for the cover art to come in. So there's always things like that to keep in mind. And so the sooner the better.
Jekyll and Hyde thing, it's weird.
You want me to end it?
How do you mean?
You tell me when we'll have an accident.
Let's imagine that I'm an author that has come to you and I'm wanting to self-publish something. And even just listening to this podcast, I've realized that I don't know what you mean by front loading or PDF or DPI or gutter or any of these things. How do I leap over the fear of my own ignorance before I then talk to a company? Like, what's that?
Is there a book?
Is there a place that I can go to learn some of this lingo? Is there a book related to that? Or is it okay to call up that print rep to get quotes and just say, I know nothing and I need some you to give me some time because this is my budget and I'd like to spend it wisely? Like, what's the best way to navigate that?
Yeah, I think typically if people are unfamiliar with a lot of the terms, then I encourage them to find books that they like, that they want to mimic kind of their layout and design after. And then if it's a book we've printed, I'll be able to pull up all the specifications from that book. If it's a book we haven't printed, then I often ask for the title and some images of that book, so I can do a little bit of research that way. But we also have a book that's called A Guide to Book Production. Oh. So that goes, you know, right to the very beginning of file prep through some, it doesn't dive into the depths of everything, but it gives you enough information and resource that you can look online to find information on text paper, on cover paper, on hardcover stocks, and all those different details throughout. And it's meant to be that very basic kind of introduction to books. When you really don't know what you want, that's kind of a first step. We have a self-help guide that we send to first-time authors and even authors that we work with again infrequently. But that guide the self-help PDF that we have gives people basic information for them to look at, to think about, and also provides links on where you can apply for your ISBN and think about, again, it's asking questions early so that the thought process gets going early and not later, once the books have arrived or once you're too far down the line to make changes to things easily.
In so many industries, ignorance is an opportunity for the seller to take advantage, right? And so I think we are trained to be afraid to like come to a corporation like Friesen's and say, I don't know anything, but I have some money. What do I do? In the fear that you will just err on the side of the company rather than the consumer. But I've noticed that that's less likely. The bigger, it sounds funny, but in printing, the bigger the printer, the less likely somebody is trying to scam you for a print run. Smaller printers maybe have a little bit more desperation to make a sale, to meet the quarter, to do those kinds of stuff. So we've always been, I can put it on the record that we've always felt very fairly dealt with. You know, it's not like it's always smooth sailing, Donovan. We've been together for years, right? But whenever there's been a problem, it gets handled in due course. So I think that's important.
So I'm kind of curious, maybe like not all of Friesen's, but you specifically, would you say you do more written novels, comics, graphic novels, photography books, cookbooks, like what are the percentages of the different types of books that you're typically getting made?
Yeah, recognizing that you only see one slice, like yes, the work that lands for you. But what's your experience there?
Yeah, I would say, so it's in terms of dollar value, any of the color work we do is a much higher percentage of the dollar value. So I would say on a dollar value side, we're probably looking at maybe 60% on the color side and then maybe 40% on the black and white. But in terms of units, I think because the black and white side is less money, and typically those runs are a little bit higher, your units are going to be more even. It might be closer to a 50-50 in terms of units, or even maybe a touch more in terms of the number of units of the black and white type book, something like that.
Yeah, interesting. I'm not sure if you're able to tell tales out of school. I'm coming around. I'm just having the thought right now, but I know that I have a book through Great Plains, which is their imprint Yellow Dog is with you now. They're using you as the printer. Are you the book rep on that book?
Yes. Yeah. I'm the contact for Great Plains.
Okay. So an author who doesn't know any of that stuff, like I publish hybrid stuff. So I'll self-publish my own things. And then I also go through a publisher. A publisher has a different kind of model under which they have to operate with their printer. Maybe you could talk about what's different on that side of things when the direct author or creator relationship is one or two steps removed, what the front loading is like, how they have to plan for their catalogs, those ISBNs, just speak to some of that side.
Yeah, so they typically, not every publisher, but most trade publishers have their list nailed down for the next year at least, if not 18 months or 24 months in a lot of cases. So the flexibility of, adding titles or moving titles is not really there. Whereas for the two of you, if you all of a sudden had some artwork in the archives that you wanted to put together, and you said, hey, in a week we can put this together, you can do that. If you were to take that same artwork and approach a trade publisher, they'd say, sure, this looks good. We'll do it in 18 months to 24 months because that's when it's going to fit on our cycle in most cases. Right. Smaller publishers are a little bit more flexible on that end. Trade publishers generally are booking their lists well in advance. Not all of them, but the ones who, have an established relationship with a printer, Great Plains would be one of them. We're talking at least 6-7 months in advance where we're booking those titles, confirming specs well in advance and getting paper ordered and doing all of those things that for an individual typically happen much later in the ballgame. You're doing that, a week or two before the files come in, whereas, Great Plains, in a lot of cases, 3 months in advance has confirmed what they're doing because they know their market, they know the genre that each book is in, how many they think they're going to sell, and they can make those decisions much earlier on. So those trade publishers, they typically require less handholding. There's less questions throughout the process because they have a pretty standard way of doing things. They have their papers they like, they have their cover finishes they like, and for the most part, they're not looking to do anything too far out of the ordinary. When you're dealing with artists and individuals,
there was a tone there, Jonathan.
That's a different question and a different type of discussion, but you end up having more, there's more discussion about what papers are available, and in a lot of cases there's references to other books where, hey, I saw this amazing finish, is that something you can do? How do you make it happen? Is that something you do in-house? Do you have to outsource it? And there's both aspects, obviously, that I enjoy in terms of relationship building with longstanding customers that do the same type of work. But I also enjoy looking at and trying to come up with creative ways to create, a dream for somebody in a lot of cases. And that may be playing around with the type of paper we're using on the inside or using a unique cover finish. And those things, I love working with those and pushing our production team to do something that's maybe a little bit different than they've tried before.
There's a really specific example. Donovan was in the studio and we were talking about a couple of projects, and I have this monster thing that's like 400 pages. And very specifically, he had brought paper samples and said, look at the difference in weight between these two, right? If your shipping is something you're going to be considering, here's the same number of pages, weighs half as much, right? These are the kinds of considerations that talking with your book rep it's really important that you look at what the end result, what you hope to be, what you're accomplishing. Making a gigantic book is everybody's dream, a huge coffee table, something, but then it has to get places.
Thanks to Dr. Patrick Corey, Donovan's brain will live, thrive, and continue to grow far beyond the body of Dr. Corey.
More and more, like, a consideration for, like, when I'm making books, I'm thinking about, I've just been shipping so much stuff lately. How is this going to ship? How much is it going to cost me? Because most of my audience is in the States. So that's suddenly a lot more expensive to ship than anywhere in Canada. And we've done projects in the past where the mission statement was, we want to make a book that can be sent in letter mail.
Yeah. Can you send it with a stamp?
Can you send it with a stamp? Yeah.
Yeah. Snow Troll's Daughter and Red and See-Through were, design a book you can send with a stamp.
I think that was also one of those, we called you up like a month before we wanted to print it and said, we want to make this little book. Can it happen? And you said yes. And then we had 10 days to make the book.
To meet the
deadline.
You said there was a gap in the print schedule on the kind of, with the paper and the kind of binding you're doing, our machine has a space. If you meet this deadline, yes. Otherwise, you'll have to wait till summer, kind of thing, right? And so we just put our heads down and ran for it. And that relationship with the printer, if you're a self-published, or even if you're doing hybrid publishing, having that direct relationship with someone you can call up and say, is it even possible, before you budget your time and money, is a huge step, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing I'll just jump on in terms of materials and stuff is that we do have a host of different sample books that we can provide. So again, either meeting face-to-face or having me ship or having our plant send some samples to take a look at, both our printing samples, just kind of our standard books, or actually samples of printed books we've done for other people. We can certainly do that. And one of the most valuable things, again, that I typically try and do for new customers is a dummy book, which is a book that's blank. I know, Gregory, you love using these for art sketchbooks for your kids as well when you're done with using them, but they're books that give you a view of what is the finished product going to look like. They're made by hand. So, you know, not everything is 100% accurate in them, but they're made with the same materials we're going to use in the end. So you get a sense of the weight, the dimension, because some people have a hard time, you know, picturing what is a 200 page landscape hardcover book feel like. Mm-hmm. And can I look at it on two different papers so I can see which weight I prefer and how the paper feels. And so those are the types of things we do in advance so that when we have to place that paper order, we know which way we want to go.
Yeah. And speaking to that, Cassian Tong, Preston Water, Dragon Nanny, they're the format they are because partially we imagine, I mean, we like the art books, the Disney art books in that format. We lifted the format, but it also had a secondary goal of, it's a book you're going to read with someone. And so if you're sitting with the book between you, then it's big enough, it's a widescreen event kind of that you're both exploring together. And you can't really feel what that's like until you've actually done it in person. So
it's huge, the difference from your book on a screen to the printed book. And I can't recommend more either. Yeah, through your printer, getting sample pages, or even just going to a local print shop and printing out your first couple of pages to see what they look like in your hand, because it's a world of difference between that screen and that printed page. Even now, Gregor and I, it's hard to imagine without actually getting that printed page.
And if you combine that experience now with the dummy book, you know what it'll feel like to the person you're going to give it to, the person who receives it as a gift, the person who explores it. Donovan, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your time and all the years that you have dealt with our constant questions, aggravating last second projects. You're a pleasure to work with, and we definitely endorse Friesens and the work that you do. Thanks so much for being with us.
Excellent. I appreciate the opportunity to jump alongside you here. And I've loved the projects we've worked with. They, even though some of them are similar, they're never exactly the same. There's always something that we're looking to tweak. And, you know, I appreciate the challenges that you send our way in
we want to
try something new. Yeah, exactly.
I'm rubbing my hands like a comic book villain right now. This has been Super Pulp Science, where we've talked about how genre gets made. I am Gregory Kamichuk, encouraging you to join the fight and make comms.